Thanks a million, Shane.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. How are you? Hope all is well. It is so wintry out there. I don't know about you. I've been trying to warm up all day. But President Biden's words were kind of heartwarming, weren't they? And seemed to have struck the right chord. Big focus on the young people of Northern Ireland. And yeah, I took a break to listen to a speech, cup of tea, chocolate brownie. I heard Ryan talking about brownies this morning and nothing would do me but to stop and buy a box of them on the way to work. But it's something we don't really do in work anymore. Was that, you know, tea, biscuit, stop, have a break, maybe a couple with colleagues. And anyway, now there are calls to reintroduce the traditional tea break. Research reveals a third of workers don't even know the name of the colleagues in their immediate office. I don't know, I'd imagine that's probably as a result of COVID as well and remote working. But a study involving 4,000 staff found 70% of people take less than a 15-minute break every day besides lunch. And most of us are too busy to take any time out at all. So what do you reckon? Should we introduce the traditional tea break? We'd have to go easy on the brownies and the biscuits if it was a daily thing. I don't know, when we get 5 minutes to chill now, what do? Grab the phone, have an L scroll, which was exactly what I was doing earlier when I read the news that actress Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things and Jake Bon Jovi, who is John Bon Jovi's son, they're engaged. She's 19, he's 20. And she posted a photo of the two of them on Instagram with the caption, "I've loved you for 3 summers now, honey, and I want them all. And there's definitely a rock on the finger." But of course, this has sparked a big online debate. People are saying they're too young. And we were chatting upstairs. I don't think it's hugely surprising in the States. People seem to get married younger in the UK and America, mostly like in their 20s rather than their 30s. And yeah, we're fierce slow in Ireland these days to get the rock on the finger. If we get married at all, I don't know, maybe we're less willing to settle, or we put our careers ahead of marriage and starting a family maybe. And likely for a lot of couples, people can't afford weddings. But we'd love to hear your thoughts. Maybe you got married young and lived to tell the tale, or maybe you feel, looking back, you were too young. You can give us a text, 51551, or you can email ray@rte.ie. Also on Twitter today, there was a great thread of people sharing the photos. You know, the photos that you have on your lock screen, on your phone. And there was one fella who changed the picture on his lock screen depending on who he was with. So when he was with his girlfriend, he had a lovely picture of her with him. And when he was with the lads, he had a picture of his car or his motorbike, I think it was. I mean, if that's not a red flag, I don't know what is. But we had a snoop on each other's phone. Emily here on the team has a very romantic picture of her with her fiancé Will on the front of her phone. And she said, on the contrary, he has a picture of his first love, the Chelsea football team. That is his lock screen. Grace, she has a picture of her nephews dressed up as Mario and Luigi. And she chose not to use the picture of the three of them together where she's dressed as evil Wario. Jilly has a gorgeous picture of Roscoe, which is her dachshund, but her little doggy. But Neil definitely wins hands down. He has Jennifer Coolidge from The White Lotus, which is definitely as good as it gets. What else? Yes, Duran Duran's Simon Le Bon is in the papers today. Did you ever get the wrong end of the stick? You know, when you think that you're signed up for something that ended up being the exact opposite of what you expected. Well, spare a thought for Simon Le Bon, who turned up to record Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas, thinking he was singing it as a solo. Imagine. And he said he was so confused when he arrived and saw Bono at the studio. He was chatting on a recent podcast and he said, what? Like when he got there, he was like, what is that Bono guy doing here? I thought I was doing this. And instead he had to share the verses with Paul Young, as we know, and Boy George and George Michael and yes, Bono. So not quite the moment he expected for himself. Slightly mortifying, but sure, look, he can look back now and say, thankfully, it all worked out. Now, after 4 o'clock, I am looking forward to chatting to the gaff goddess, Laura de Barra. She's going to be in inspiring us to give our homes the L spring clean. So if you need a bit of inspiration, or maybe you need some advice, maybe you want to tackle a room or the whole house this week, you can get your questions into us, 51551 or ray@rte.ie, and we'll pass them on to her. Also, I thought this was lovely online today. Legendary crooner Tony Christie, he He's 79 and he's recently been diagnosed with dementia. He's going to record his own version of Thank You for Being a Friend. Do you remember the theme tune from the Golden Girls soundtrack? What a great show. And we all got very excited upstairs talking about it today. Here is a classic encounter between the wonderful Dorothy and Rose.
You know, I had the shock of my life today. I was in the teacher's lounge talking to a group of girls in their 20s. Oh, they were so pretty. At that age, you don't even have to be pretty and you're pretty. Anyway, we were laughing and giggling and having a great time, and I completely forgot that I was older. You know, I just felt like one of the girls, and we had a wonderful time. And then I got into my car and caught a glimpse of myself, and I almost had a heart attack. This old woman was in the mirror. I didn't even recognize her.
Who was it?
I just loved that show. And actually, when you go back and watch it, it really stands the test of time, as does the original tune, of course, written by Andrew Gold in 1978. Perfect for the day that's in it, I think. A little bit of nostalgia there. Emma has texted in, Catherine, I think there is a lot of social pressure to have a copy and paste wedding. I was dying to get engaged after 6 years with my partner, and now that he's asked and I've done some research, the costs, wow, I am just not bothered anymore. There's too much pressure to get the ring on the finger. Yeah, I have to agree with you as well. I think just with the comparisons that go on and Pinterest and social media and the whole thing, it is a lot of pressure and a lot of expense. Somebody else has said, stats from the CSO show that the average age of a groom in Ireland was 40 last year and the average age of a bride was 35. Yeah, if you've just joined us, we were chatting at the top of the show about kids, 19 and 20, John Bon Jovi's son was getting married, 19 and 20, and how young that was, or how the whole online community was debating as to how young that was. We were talking about tea breaks as well. Catherine, I'm self-employed. I take 20 minutes in the morning, 40 minutes for lunch, and 15 minutes in the afternoon. I would be lost without my breaks. Simon, we could all learn a thing or two from you. Lots more coming in, and I will try and get to them. But now I want to tell you about our quiz. It is our brand new, well, newish quiz, and we've called it the Whodunit quiz. So we are looking for two of you to come on air after 4 o'clock to answer three questions each, and it could be on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, and there will be clues. So if you answer without a clue, you get 2 points, and if you opt for a clue, which is easier, you get 1 point on the board. And we have an amazing prize all of this week. It is for bed and breakfast for 2 adults and 2 children in a lodge at Bota Island Resort. It's 2 nights, and you are nestled in the heart of a peaceful island, surrounded by gorgeous scenery, 8 miles from Cork City. You can enjoy complete privacy and 5-star luxury in one of the exclusive 2, 3 or 4 bedroom self-catering lodges, which is perfect for families or groups of friends. Check them out, photoisland.ie. And all you've got to do to enter to be in with a chance of winning that prize is answer this question. US President Joe Biden arrived in Belfast last night. Is his plane called Air Force One or Air Force Four? You can give us a call, 0818-715-925. That's 0818-715-925. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So you can keep your text coming in to 51551. Now, there's potentially a new type of nightlife emerging in Dublin that caught our eye. This weekend just gone, there was a sober rave in the city centre. It was set up so that people could experience the atmosphere of the whole club scene without alcohol. The organiser is Paul Walsh, and he is here with me now. Paul, tell me it was a good night.
It was an absolutely whopper night.
Was it a good one? It was a banger, as they say.
but it actually was. Like, I suppose once people, you know, when you first arrive, I suppose there's like a warming up element, right?
Yes. But that's like any party, you know, the 21st. You're waiting for people to arrive and there's that nervous anticipation.
It's a natural process. So I suppose once you kind of arrive, you're chatting to a few people, the music is starting up, you're kind of loosening up a bit. But I suppose once the intensity of the music starts picking up and you're loosening up more and more, you kind of forget about everything and you're actually just involved in the process of your dancing.
Sure.
And an hour later, if you check back in on yourself, you're like, oh my God, like I'm in my flow, I'm expressing myself, I'm actually experiencing a buzz. And if someone said, hey, do you need a drink? It's like, What for?
And I don't think I'm wrong in saying for a lot of people, because we've had sober discos and sober nights out, but the whole techno and rave scene for a lot of people, it is kind of about the drugs and the alcohol in terms of that stimulus.
Absolutely. So I lived in Berlin for a year, 2015, 2016. So like Berghain's one of the biggest clubs in the world. Mm-hmm. That year I went to Berghain about 30 times. And 25 of the times I went sober.
Mm.
And I suppose like my alcohol and drug days were behind me, but I was still wanting to actually like go to clubs and listen to whopper music and actually dance. So I suppose while I was living in Berlin, I was like, right, I'm actually going to really try this and I'm really going to commit to this. You know, so I'd walk into the club and the first hour it would be like, okay, I'm just warming up. But the tunes are so good and I genuinely want to dance. So I'm like, I'm just going to commit to this. And then over time, or as you warm up more and more and more, and I check back in on myself, I'm like, I'm actually there. I'm in the state that I want to be in. I'm dancing to the music expressively. I then also sit in, I'm waking up the next day without hangovers. And I'm like, there's something here.
That is the magic.
There's something here.
So why do you think a lot of us need to have a few drinks to dance? Because if it's innately in us,
for sure,
why do we need it?
Okay, so my sense is that it's something to do with anxiety and awkwardness, right?
Yeah.
So like even right now, before I start this interview, right? So like I'm excited, but also there's a bit of nerves in me, right?
Sure.
But I'm not making my nerves a problem. I'm going to let them be there and I'm going to proceed forward anyway. So again, if we go into social situations, there is some type of awkwardness. But there's this feeling that the awkwardness shouldn't be there and we need to get it to go away. And therefore you have a few drinks and it goes away.
Mm.
But I suppose my sense is that it's possible to be with that awkwardness in a kind of a soft, kind way, but engage in conversation. Ask a question with curiosity. Be enthusiastic in your attitude. And if you stay doing that and someone else is being enthusiastic back with you, half an hour later, you'll probably discover that the awkwardness and anxiety is gone and you're now in a good state.
Mm.
And then just keep going.
How did it go down, first of all? How many people turned up, first of all?
Yeah, so 127 tickets were sold.
Okay.
So like 300 would have been a full house. So I'm reasonably happy with ticket sales. But what I'm absolutely delighted about was, I suppose, what I envisioned of the states that people would get to, that totally happened. Like, in essence, like pure rave energy was in the room when I was like, this is amazing. And I'm confident that the next show, I want to sell 300 tickets. I want it to be a full house.
So,
and by the way, next show, July 1st in the complex.
Next show, July 1st in the complex. So you kind of went on that journey yourself, you could say, when you were living in Berlin and you had to go 25 times and really, I suppose, experience that and break through that inner lack of confidence that you're now, I suppose, promoting that other people try, right?
For sure. So like I first had a drink when I was 12. And then when I was 15, I was getting into my running quite serious. And I was like, yeah, I want to stop drinking because I want to take my running serious. But then I also was like, you know, why are all my friends drinking? Because they want to have fun. I'm like, I'm just going to be a person who can have fun without drink. I just made that decision. But then when I was 22, I said to myself one day, you don't know the experience that you're saying no to. As in, you've never been an adult who's been drunk before. So I was like, I'm going to give it a go. So I went drinking that night and had a great time. And then for the next 4 years, I was actually drinking and taking drugs regularly enough. And then at around 26, I was kind of like, I think I'm going to rein it back. So I suppose I'm going to use the discipline that I used when I was 15 to 22, not being a drinker, just being a person who can, I suppose, who tries to express themselves socially with some type of confidence or whatever. From that period, from 22 to 26, when I said, right, I'm going to rein it in, that's the time that I moved to Berlin. So now I'm in this environment again where it's like, you could say it's one of the biggest clubbing cities in the world, right? And I'm like, okay, I still really want a club. I still really want a party. I'm just going to have fun without using alcohol or drugs. Mm.
Drink is such a big part of our culture. And that's the issue. Like, I mean, I just think about an Irish wedding without a drink.
For sure. So the thing is, so it is part of our culture, right? And I suppose I'm not saying or promoting we need to stop drinking, right? What I'm creating the frame is developing the capacity to be able to enjoy yourself without the need for a drink. Mm. So it's possible to develop that capacity. However, you from time to time, you still may choose to enjoy a drink because you enjoy it, but you're not using the drink because you don't have the capacity to socialise.
Mm. And I think that is such an important message that we need to get out there, that
Absolutely.
It is not necessary all the time.
For sure.
To have that fun and to have, and it's like, when is that message going to hit home in Dublin and
right.
across Ireland?
Some people are like, well, how can you do that? And I'm like, it's possible.
Mm.
It might take an hour to warm up, but you can get to a similar state, good feelings and expression in a sober rave.
And I have to say, I like the fact that you're not being kind of preachy about it or, you know, finger pointy about it. It's just about asking people to maybe try it.
Absolutely.
Well, you've definitely given us something to think about. So the next one is July.
Saturday, July 1st in the complex just off Capel Street. It's an absolutely incredible space. And that's actually something that's also important. It's a place that you'd love to go to anyway.
How do you promote this? Like where do people find out about it?
The name of the event is called Club Loosen. So there's an Instagram page and a Facebook page.
Like so it.
That's in full effect. And I love it.
Love the message. Paul, thanks for coming in and chatting to me today.
Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guest has a story that will stop you in your tracks. Suzanne Heywood has written an autobiography about a childhood like no other. In 1976, inspired by the famous explorer Captain Cook, Suzanne's father decided to take the family on a 3-year sailing trip. But it was a journey at sea that ended up lasting a decade. And Suzanne's book tells the truth about the pain of being uprooted in childhood. The memoir is called Wave Walker Breaking Free, and Suzanne joins me now. Good afternoon, Suzanne.
Hi, good afternoon. Lovely to join you.
Lovely to chat to you. So this story starts with your father's fascination with Captain Cook. So maybe start by telling us a little bit about him and what he wanted to achieve.
Yeah, so my maiden name is Cook, and I think my father, who loved sailing, although he'd never crossed an ocean before, decided it would be a wonderful thing to commemorate the 200th anniversary of Captain Cook's voyage around the world. Captain Cook was a fantastic explorer, and he did 3 big voyages of exploration. Nobody got around to commemorating the first and the second, so my father was very keen to commemorate the third one, during which Captain Cook sailed the wrong way around the world into the wind to try and find out if there was a northeast passage around the top of Alaska back to Europe. And that was the one that my father decided he wanted to recreate.
And was this something, when you were a child, was this something that had always been his fascination? Was it something that he had talked about doing and exploring?
It's hard to tell because we set sail when I was 7, but from my perspective, it came almost out of the blue. I had a very normal childhood up till then. I was going to primary school. I had friends. I was doing all the normal things that you'd expect a 7-year-old girl to be doing. And all of a sudden, one morning, my father announced that that was it. We were going to be sailing around the world, following Captain Cook around the world.
And I mean, when you say that, and when I hear you say that, sailing around the world with your family, like, my first thought is what a privilege and an adventure and what an idyllic childhood. But as you said, you were 7, you were going to school. Do you remember the discussions before the trip? Like, were you consulted at all?
No, not really. I mean, I was 7, so I wasn't really consulted at the start. And I think to start with, when we set sail, it was a mixed emotion for me. I mean, I was obviously leaving my friends behind. I was leaving my dog behind, Rusty, water spaniel, who I missed very much. My beloved doll's house. at least the first part of the trip was fantastic. We saw whales and dolphins and flying fish, and you know, had all sorts of adventures. But even early on, we hit very bad weather, really quite early on. And my mother, it turned out, was dreadfully seasick and really disappeared for several days. Most of the first week, actually, that we were at sea, my mother disappeared altogether. So my brother was a year younger than me, so I was 7, he was 6, were really left down below by ourselves for quite a lot of that first week. And then, as I say, it got a little bit better because we saw whales and dolphins and, you know, being in the middle of the ocean is a fantastic thing. But I had a first hint, if you like, that this wasn't going to be quite as straightforward as I thought it might be.
And you mentioned your mother there, because reading the book, there does seem to be quite a lot of time on any of the big voyages and any of the big stretches where you're weeks at a time at sea. She got quite seasick and, as you said, spent quite a lot of time in her room where you guys were on your own. But yet, she supported and recognised the need in your father to do this. So did she support him right the way through those first few years? Or did she ever just go, that's enough, I'm done?
So my mother and my father were very close and remained very close. My mother sadly passed away in 2016, but they remained very close. And her overwhelming desire was to kind of support my father and be with my father through whatever happened. And as we will come on to, some kind of pretty horrific things then happened. And that was really her kind of number one priority. She was less concerned about us kids. She did give us a little bit of kind of schooling kind of early on, but she would, as you say, kind of disappear for quite long periods of time at the start of each voyage. And her main priority was to support my father.
Mm. And you talked about moments of joy with dolphins and whales and seeing beautiful, amazing places and desert islands. And it all sounds very romantic. But there was another side to it. Like the reading about the journey where you guys crossed the Southern Atlantic Ocean sounded horrific.
Well, that's right. I mean, we left the UK, we sailed down to South America, to Rio, and that kind of first journey, apart from that first week, was not too bad. We then set sail across the Southern Atlantic Ocean to South Africa. That's a very tough ocean for those who've sailed, and it's not an ocean you'd normally embark on, particularly with kind of small children, and we were sailing the wrong way across it. The winds go one way around the planet, and we were sailing the wrong way.
You were west
to east.
Which
we had to do if we were going to follow Captain Cook, because he went the wrong way. So we had terrible storms crossing that ocean, and it was all made worse by the fact that we broke our compass halfway across that ocean, which meant that not only were we in terrible storms and I couldn't come up on the deck for many, many days on end, but also we didn't know where we were. So we eventually found our way to South Africa, and then we had to set sail across the second terrible ocean, in fact, the worst ocean of all, which is the Southern Indian Ocean between South Africa and Australia. That is, you know, most sailors will say the kind of worst bit of ocean to cross. And again, we were due to cross it the wrong way from west to east.
And that's where you actually, I should say to people that Wave Walker is the name of the boat. That was the name of your ship. And at that point, you were shipwrecked, right?
We were indeed. We got halfway across the Southern Indian Ocean. We were in a terrible storm that went on for several days. The waves got bigger and bigger and bigger. We were in kind of 30-foot waves. And eventually, my father recounts looking behind himself and seeing what he thought was a cloud, but he later realized was several waves that had combined together, which were kind of over 90 feet high. And they smashed right over the boat. We had a 70-foot boat, so quite a long boat, went straight through the middle of the deck, so missed the first 30 foot of the kind of stern of the boat, straight through the middle of the deck and out the side of the deck. And I was standing in the main cabin. I was still only 7 years old. I was flung up against the ceiling and against the wall of the cabin, fractured my skull, and had quite a bad kind of blood clot on the brain. And my arm was quite badly injured as well. So at that point, the boat was effectively sinking, and we were in the middle of the Indian Ocean. There's nobody down there, basically. You can't really get in a life raft because all you'll do is sink very quickly. So our only hope really was to find a tiny island. If you look at that bit of ocean, there's not much there, but there is a tiny island called Amsterdam that has a little French military base on it, and we knew that we had to try and find that and hopefully get medical help for me.
And you did that.
We did.
When you arrived there, I mean, I'm just trying to, because reading the book as well, you and your brother and your mother spend so much time below deck that it's hard even to imagine your father at the wheel. I know you had various crew on board at various times throughout the years as well, but you were essentially held captive because it was too dangerous for you to be above board. And so when you have a fractured skull, you've got a blood clot in your brain, the boat still has to get somewhere. I mean, the crew still have to sail. And yet you are left with those injuries and you're physically hurt, you're emotionally traumatised, and you're 7 years of age.
I know. I mean, I was kind of put in a bunk in a cabin that had the smallest hatch because that was the safest cabin. But it was a horrific time. And you'll see in the book, you know, I have nightmares about it for many, many years afterwards, although it was not something that my parents ever allowed us to discuss. It was a kind of banned topic. The whole accident was a banned topic. And you're right. You know, that kind of first period of my life on the boat, I spent a lot of time below deck because it was just too dangerous to come up on deck. And then we go on to a kind of later period of my life because I end up being on this boat for a decade, almost a decade, when I'm stuck on the boat because we just keep sailing and I just can't get off the boat. So I'm effectively trapped. fact, which is one of the surreal things about my childhood, and what I think kind of makes the story kind of interesting, is that it looks superficially idyllic, particularly when we finally reach the South Pacific, but actually I'm trapped on a boat, you know, away from kind of schooling and friendships, and I have no way to kind of get away from this boat.
And why, when you reached the South Pacific, was there not the finish line? Because you reached where Captain Cook's voyage took him, you reached the finish line. So why was that not the end?
Well, it should have been the end. So after 4 years of sailing, we reached Hawaii. And Hawaii was the really the kind of end of Captain Cook's third voyage. He was killed in Hawaii.
Yes, yeah.
And so that really should have been the end of our voyage. And my father declared that we were going to have a family boat. And up until that point, he'd always maintained that we had these boats, and whatever was decided in the boat, that was what the family would go with. So we had a boat. And my parents both voted to keep sailing. I think they just love sailing. They didn't really want to come back to the rat race back in the UK, and my brother and I both voted to come home. I was desperate to come home. I desperately wanted to get an education. I was missing friends, and my relationship with my mother was deteriorating very badly by that point. I was a 12-year-old. I was going into puberty, and my kind of relationship with my mother was kind of not good, and it ended up getting a lot worse, as becomes clear in the book. And so we both voted to go home. So it was a split vote, and my father declared, you know, what you don't realize is this is not a, you know, this is not a democracy, this is a benevolent dictatorship, and I'm voting that we keep going. And then we kept going. And for me, that is the real kind of turning point of my childhood and the whole story, because from that point on, I'm effectively trapped on this boat. I can't get off this boat. I'm not there by my own choice. I can't go anywhere. I don't have a passport. I don't even remember who my relatives are back in the UK. And of course, I've got no adult to go to because I'm not going to school. I'm not in any sort of kind of formal system of any sort.
I mean, it's very clear when you read the book how much you regret missing out on your childhood, how much having no childhood friends to rely on, how much that affected you. And then, I mean, I wanted to ask you about that when you talk about hitting 12 and 13 and puberty and right the way through 15, 16, 17, when all of those life experiences that should be happening are not happening. And there's a moment in the book where you, I can't remember where you were, but you were on shore and you rang Childline.
Well, that's right. I mean, I ended up on the boat after that point for another four or so years, desperately trying to kind of teach myself eventually by post, but living on this boat, which by that point became a floating hotel because we ran out of money. So my father started taking paying crew on board, and I was expected to work for several hours every day, helping to kind of cook and clean for all of these crew. There was no space, so I just had a bunk, which I had to share with the crew. No space to work. We only had one table, which didn't seat everybody. So very, very difficult conditions, you know, adding in, of course, that you're on a boat at sea and everything else. Only one bathroom. One working bathroom. Eventually, you know, my relationship with my mother deteriorates, and my parents effectively drop my brother and me off in New Zealand. I'm 16, he's 15, and they sail away. They say they want to keep on sailing, so they leave us on our own in New Zealand.
With who or where? Did you know anybody?
So they rented like a little hut, which was near kind of Rotorua, which is in the middle of New Zealand, about an hour away from the nearest town. My brother was enrolled in a school, so he was going to school every day. I was trying to finish off my correspondence course, but we were on our own. I knew no adults in New Zealand apart from one person in Auckland who was, you know, 3 hours away by, you know, driving, who I didn't see during that period. And that was the point at which I rang Childline, because I was stuck on my own in New Zealand. I was 16 years old, looking after a kind of younger brother. And I really couldn't cope. And my father had also kind of left me kind of running his business, trying to kind of book kind of crew onto the boat. And I really, really couldn't cope. And, you know, their advice to me was, you've got to find a friend, you've got to find somebody. You know, you've been effectively abandoned by your parents, you're kind of stuck in this foreign country on your own. My visa kept on running out as well, I kept on getting threatened with being kind of deported. So somehow I managed through what ended up being kind of 9 months of being left on our own in New Zealand, at the end of which I got a one-way ticket, came back to the UK, and managed to get myself a place at university. Never really went back after that, apart from a very brief visit.
Wow. I mean, what did the whole experience do to your family?
Well, I mean, I never, you know, formed a kind of proper relationship again with my parents. I mean, we had a civil relationship as when I became an adult. But for them, it was I was never allowed to discuss the past. You know, it could never be kind of raised in anything other than positive terms. They just would not discuss it. So we had a very superficial relationship, really.
And did your father, you know, gloat about it and the achievement, because you can't take that away from it. It is an incredible achievement to complete that voyage. Did he talk about it afterwards?
He did. He did. So my father wrote a book, which was about the first bit of the voyage. And he kind of finishes off the book by saying, you know, and it all kind of worked out great. And, you know, my son and my daughter went on to university, which was never the kind of full story, as it were. And I just kind of put up with that for years. I just thought, you know, like many people, I have some sort of relationship with my parents. I'm going to leave it like that. I then discovered as an adult that I love to write, and this is actually my fourth book, and this was a story that I always knew I would need to tell. And I actually think it's a very important story, because for me it's about what parents should be allowed to do, or, you know, kind of where you know, your children cannot decide whether to go on a long voyage like this. They can't, you know, they don't take a decision to put themselves in danger. If you're going to make that sort of decision, I think you've got to be very careful what you do. And so I always wanted to tell the story. And at the point at which I decided to tell it, my parents, I'm afraid, got very, very angry. My father kind of walked out on me and my children. I'm now widowed, unfortunately. But he walked out on us in 2019, and I haven't spoken to him since. I've written to him a couple of times, but he, you know, he's basically kind of walked out because he's so angry that I'm writing my story. But I just think it's a story that needs to be told, and a story that I wanted to tell. And I hope other people find it interesting, because it really is a rip-roaring story of kind of life on the high seas, and, you know, but it's the world in the boat that is really fascinating. Mm. All of those kind of relationships and what happens below deck.
You mentioned that you've got your own children now, Suzanne. What would you say is your approach to parenting?
Well, I've got three absolutely lovely children. Well, they drive me mad from time to time, like every kind of parent. I mean, I think the key thing with my children, and what I learned from my childhood, is that they need to know at every point in time. Sorry, managed to take a sip of water.
Do, yeah, go ahead.
I think it's very, very important. You explain to your kids at every point in time that they're loved. And I think when I look back at my childhood, that's the thing that was missing. Mm. And I think it's really important, and I've always tried to explain this to my kids, that, you know, as a parent, you make it very clear to your children that they are important to you. And I never really felt as a child in my childhood that I was really very important. Mm-hmm. So that for me is the big learning. And I think that my children do feel that.
Mm. Well, listen, it has been such a pleasure chatting to you today. It is an incredible read. The book is called Wave Walker, Breaking Free. And I think if anything, you know, you really get a sense of your resilience through the book, and that I think your resilience is the hope that shines through in this book as well. So it was lovely chatting to you today, Suzanne. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Cork singer-songwriter Stephanie Rainey is here. It is lovely to see you. How are you?
Really, really good. Lovely to see you.
Yeah, and we're going to have a proper catch up after 4 o'clock. But now we're going to hear a new track. It's called Breathe Easy, and it's a song that has a very special story behind it. So you might just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so about this time last year, I got approached by a songwriter from Cork. I got an email in basically saying that he had a song. His name is Miles Gaffney. He had a song that he had written. And I've said this a few times. I get people sending me songs a lot, you know, could you sing it?
And it's not something you normally do.
No, because yeah. I suppose I'm a writer myself, so I just have my own songs to do, and it would have to be, I find it very hard to sing something unless I can really relate to it, you know. Mm-hmm. But the story of this was just so heartbreaking, and I think at the time I had just had my little boy Jackson, so it hit me even harder, I think, in my heart, you know. So Miles's niece, Kira, she was 23 and she found out she was pregnant, but she had cystic fibrosis all her life. And she gave birth to Rocco and everything was going fine. And then sadly, 12 days later, she just passed away from complications with cystic fibrosis. So just a really hard hitting story. Rocco is flying it now. He's 5. And Miles wrote the most beautiful song kind of from her perspective of just, I guess, wanting him to just live to the fullest, you know.
It's heartbreaking.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. We made a music video for it and we told the story, I think, as best we possibly could in that context. So just one of those stories that I think, you know, when you're trying to draw attention to something, will cut through and make people stop for a second and go, wow, you know, that's heavy. Mm-hmm.
So and it was important, I suppose, for you to release it this week, because it is obviously, it's 65 Roses Day on Friday, which is raising awareness about cystic fibrosis right across Ireland.
Absolutely. And like, that's why this is kind of a year in the making, really. Like, we kind of missed the boat on it last year. We were just too close to the date to get everything together. And I said to Miles, if we're going to do it, we should do it properly. We should have everything ready that we can really put a campaign around it. And I think we managed to do that this year. But yeah, Friday is their 65 Roses Day. So we released the song on Friday, last Friday on the 7th. And between then and the 14th, any streams, downloads will go straight to cystic fibrosis. And we've been doing great with that. There's also like a donate button on the Facebook video where you can watch the entire story and the song and the Instagram video as well. And the donations are flying there. So people are really getting behind it, which is fantastic. I'm really proud of it. And Friday is a big day for Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. You know, they have their 65 Roses Day. There'll be purple roses on sale in Dunn stores and a few other places as well around the place. So if you can on Friday, donate what you can.
All right, well, let's take a listen. This is Stephanie Rainey with Breathe Easy. Oh, that's Stephanie Rainey singing Breathe Easy. Oh my God, Stephanie, beautiful song, but you handled it and delivered it so well. One listener says, I'm in tears. More info on how to get the song, please.
Yeah, you can get it. If you've got like an iPhone, you can get it on iTunes like straight away. Just go into your iTunes app, or else you'll get it anywhere. You'll get a Facebook at Stephanie Rainey Music is my handle. So it's on my Facebook. It's on my Instagram. You'll get it on YouTube. So it's available everywhere.
Okay. All right. And listen, you're going to come back and play for us live after 4. So look forward to that. Anish Thoshe and I'm the Priv Shgalt and Anuagdal Lamarian Nihulawan. Gurumagot Marian, a lot of people looking for the name of Suzanne Haywood's book. That was called Wave Walker, and it is available on all online platforms and good bookshops as well. So yeah, really interesting chat with her. Okay, now it is time for this. Yes, it is our whodunit quiz, and we have two people ready to go. They are going to answer 3 questions each on music, sport, TV, books, politics and film. And we're going to give them clues if they choose to accept them. What are they playing for today? We've got a great prize today and all this week. It is 2 nights bed and breakfast for 2 adults and 2 children in a lodge at Fota Island Resort. They can enjoy the privacy and 5-star luxury of one of the exclusive 2, 3 or 4 bedroom self-catering lodges, perfect for families and groups and fellow golfers. The resort is 8 miles from Cork City, so you can just pack your bags and escape to your own private island. Photoisland.ie is where you can find out more. And we asked the guys, US President Joe Biden arrived in Belfast last night. Is his plane called Air Force One or Air Force Four? And of course, it is Air Force One. And we've got 2 people, Grace and Liz, ready to do battle. So let's start with Grace. You are player one. Good afternoon, Grace. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Catherine. How are you?
I am good. Not a bother. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Carrigaline, actually, in Cork as well.
In
so
County
we wouldn't
Cork.
Have too far to go if we were to win.
Lovely. And what are you up to today?
I just collected the kids there from an Easter camp, so they're all shattered. So they were happy enough to lay on the couch when I told them I had to take your call. So.
Oh, nice.
Put
nice.
On the TV for a few minutes and they'll pan out.
And are there still Easter eggs in your house, or have they been demolished?
Unfortunately, there is. Yes.
They're still
going.
We're
eating most of them in the evening to, you know, stop our children getting sick. So we're doing our good deed and having them with a cup of tea.
Well, listen, hopefully they're otherwise engaged to let you concentrate on the quiz today. Stay on the line. I'm going to go to Liz and say hello to Liz. You're in Kinsale, Liz.
Hi, yes.
How are you doing today? What are you up to?
I was just out getting a few messages done there, and I'm going to drop my son up to the roundy there in Cork. He's going sound engineering there this evening, so I'm going to make a sandwich for him there in a while and drop him up.
Oh, good. So he's doing sound. Is he a sound op, is he?
No. He's doing some sound engineering. He's in a Cork band, The Love Buzz, but he's just sound engineering tonight for another band, The Cardinals.
Love it. Very good. We were talking about weddings and wedding bands today. Yourself and your hubby, it says here, Fintan, celebrated 25 years last November.
Yes.
So a nice break away to Fota Island Resort would be a welcome break.
It would be magic. It would be magic.
And I'm going to be chatting to Laura DeBarra in a couple of minutes. Have you been spring cleaning the gaff yet?
I was saying to Emily there, I actually started in January.
You started cleaning in January?
I mean, when I say cleaning, you know, that includes removing a cobweb. You know, just nice, you know, like Rome wasn't built in a day. So I thought if I start in January and do a little bit every day.
I'm glad to say. So you're just doing it slowly. It's not like you live in a 20 bedroom mansion that you have to start in January.
No. I would like to live in a 20 bedroom mansion. That would be an awful lot of spring cleaning that. No, not for me.
All right, ladies. Good luck to both of you today, to Grace and to Liz. Grace, you are player number one. So we are going to start with you. Our first category is music. All right, so you can get 1 point if I give you a clue, or 2 points with no clue. What do you think?
Start with no clue and aim high.
Start with no clue. Okay, this is to get you 2 points on the board. Have a listen and tell me who this is. And I could cry. All right, Grace, what do you reckon?
It's a Stella Wickleman, I think, Hozier.
Yes, absolutely. No denying that voice. Great stuff. That is 2 points on the board for you. Liz, coming to you now. Your first category is also music. What do you reckon? Do you want to take a clue?
That would be my question, Catherine.
I know. It's always the way.
Because I have the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's undeniable, that voice. But you never know. Let's see. What do you reckon? 1 point with a clue, or 2 points for no clue?
Oh, Lord, I'll go on, no clue. I'll just give
no
it
clue.
A lash.
Go on, give it a lash. Here we go, Liz. Let me know and tell me who this is. All right, Liz, have you got it?
No, not as clear on this at all. I'm just going to give a wild guess. I know it's wrong. I'm second.
No, it's Sophie Ellis-Bextor is what we were looking for.
No.
Hard luck, Liz. And random bit of information as well. That was actually the theme tune for No Frontiers back in the day as well. The travel show that I did for 10 years.
Yeah. Flashbacks.
Flashbacks, yes.
I recognise it very much,
That was a toughie, though. That was a toughie. Okay, Grace, we're coming back to you. This is your second category, and it's Irish sports stars. So what do you think? Do you want a clue, which will get you 1 point, or are you going to go no clue for 2 points?
Should we go no clue again?
You're going to brave it. Okay, this is for 2 points. I just want you to have a listen and tell me who is this.
I still feel like that little kid, and I just can't believe I'm me, and it's unbelievable. I hope it does help anyone that wants to be a jockey. You know, I never thought that this would be possible for me. You know, I didn't dream about making a career as a jockey because I never thought it could happen. And, you know, it did.
All right, Grace, what do you think? Who is that?
I think it's Rachel something, and I just can't think of her surname.
Unfortunately, don't worry, it was Rachel Blackmore. That is what we were looking for. You were close, but unfortunately out of time. So that means, Liz, we are coming to you. No points on the board for you, Grace. So Liz, your category is also Irish sports stars. So what do you think? Goodness. Are you going to go clue or no clue?
Oh, Lordy. My kids and all of them to be laughing now because I'm lousy at clues. I was just starting to make sounds and I didn't hear that it was bring two kids. I just heard photo island and I ran out of the garden tree. I go no clue. I'll give it a lash.
No clue.
Yeah,
okay.
Is that a bit crazy?
No clue.
I think I'm going the wrong road here by the sounds of you.
No. It's up to you completely. If you're going to go no clue, let's do it. All you want got to do is have a listen and tell me who is this.
I still feel like that little kid and I just can't believe I'm me and it's unbelievable. You know, I hope it does help anyone that wants to be a jockey. You know, I never thought that this would be possible for me. You know, I didn't dream about making a career as a jockey because I never thought it could happen and, you know, it did.
All right, Liz, I'm going to have to call it there. Do you know what's after happening? We are after giving you two of the same clip.
I was just thinking, yes. Is that not Rachel Blackmore?
Yeah, we've had a little mishap outside and in that instance.
It really confused me because I was thinking Rachel Blackmore, but they can't be asking for the same person again.
Well, you know what? We have taken the decision in here. We are going to send the two of you to Photo Island for a breakaway. I think that is the fairest thing to do in this situation.
We are not winding you up at all.
Due to a technical difficulty, you're both getting away for the weekend. How about that?
Wow.
Well done, ladies. Well done.
Thanks a million, Cathy.
Liz sounds like she's still in shock.
Thank
there.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome, girls.
Are you being serious right now? This is so cool.
We are being very serious. Enjoy, ladies. Thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, the joys of live radio, guys. Now, it may be miserable outside, but things are looking up. The evenings are brighter and the light shining in those dirty windows are casting our homes in a very different way. Author of Gaff Goddess and Decor Galore, Laura DeBarra, joins us on the line now to talk through spring cleaning our gaffs. Laura, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at all. So when we say spring cleaning, it's just like Liz was saying there. She started in January. But spring cleaning, it's kind of the big one, isn't it? It's more than just a tidy up.
Yeah, I think like a lot of the reason I think people like to do it so much is because you can really see your house when the weather starts getting a bit brighter. Like I'm looking around being like, how is this happening? There's just loads of dust and there's sunlight for longer. The thing with spring cleaning is that I think you've been at home for long hours for a good few months and you're kind of excited to kind of feel the freshness of the space being cleaned out as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's start with, should we do it room by room? Should we start with the bathroom first? Like if you want to tackle the bathroom, how do we go about it?
I think the main thing with a spring clean is to think of things that don't get cleaned all the time, and then you can do like the top up at the end. So you're looking for things that haven't been moved all winter season or even since last summer. So you're thinking about like the backs of cupboards, under furniture. Like if I think about like the hall cupboard that I have that's got all the coats in it, you want to take things out. So in a bathroom, you want to pull out all storage, clean the inside of the storage, and then put things back in, checking things for dates. If you look at the side of any cosmetics, there should be a little jar on it with a lid open telling you how many months you should be keeping it for.
We're all guilty of that, I think, is keeping cosmetics that are way out of date.
Definitely. And it's not always harmful. Usually it's just that the product might change a bit of colour or consistency. Mm. So they're not normally that bad for you. But it's a good opportunity to kind of put everything back in an order that suits you for the coming months. So you can also rotate a lot of your storage, things that you know you're not going to use right now, put them to the back and then make sure that the summer months, it's just all about being able to get in and out of the house as quick as you can.
I saw you recently talking about hoovering the coats in the cupboard.
Yeah, like, well, what I would usually do is make sure that you're, anything that's in storage for a long time, you want to make sure, like, or even just a few months, that you are vacuuming everything down. Like, it doesn't have to be all clothing, but moths are a massive problem this time of year. And the unfortunate thing is that the moths you're seeing right now, they're not the ones that are damaging your clothes, because they don't have mouths. The how they feed themselves is through these little straws. It's actually their larvae when they're hatching that make the hole in the clothes. So moths you see now have already done the damage. So you want to, what you're doing now is preparing for next season's infestation, because that's how they work. Is after they're hatched, they'll start flying around. The ones that fly lower are heavier. They're usually females that are going to be giving more moths, and you want to just make sure that you get on top of it now so it doesn't come back again next season.
So would you be an advocate of, you know, the putting clothes away and vacuum packing them, as in, you know, those packs where you suck all the air out and you store them that way?
Not, those aren't actually designed to look after your clothes. They're great for things like bedding, things, but fibres in most clothing will get broken down inside them. They need to be able to breathe, especially natural fibres. If you want to put stuff away and you know you've moths and you can't get rid of them and you're super worried, you're better off putting them into airtight containers, like, that don't suck all the air out of it. They need the air that's within the fibres to be able to keep their shape and to not degrade in a way that they would when they're, all the air is sucked out of them. But they're perfect for if you want to just shove, like, duvets and bedding under a bed or something like that. You're better off figuring out if you have a moth problem and then stopping the cycle by using a hormone trap. And this is only for clothes moths that these work for usually. Like, most other moths will not do any damage or anything like that. And they're beautiful. It's just more the clothes moths, if they are destroying your clothes and a reason that you have to, like, send clothes to landfill, you're better off getting on top of it.
Okay. So we've dealt with the moths. Let's move to the bathroom.
Yeah, so usually the big problem, like, you'll be cleaning your bathroom weekly. So there, for a spring clean, you want to focus on things that are longer term problems. So let's say lime scale might be a massive issue.
Hi, Laura.
Which is also a lime scale.
Oh, you're back again. Can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost you there, Laura.
No worries. So with bathrooms, you want to make sure when you're spring cleaning, you want to give it a bigger clean. You want to do things you don't do every week. So that might be tackling drains and limescale. So that will usually be, like, with drains, you don't need any super intense cleaner. If you put some bicarb and vinegar down the drain, usually you can use a cup of each. They cancel each other out. It's like odour wise if you use 50-50, but it's more the fizzing action they give down the drain, followed by some warm water, which will expand the pipe slightly and pull any blockage and grease through. Even if you don't have hair going down the drain, you're going to have body oils and greasy kind of conditioners and stuff like that, and they do clog the pipes. So that can be something beautiful to do this time of year. Then with limescale, cutting a lemon or a lime in half and rubbing it along any limescale on, like, a bathroom screen or your taps or your drains or any other kind of hardware in the bathroom, they can come up stunning when you use a bit of acidity. So you can use distilled white vinegar or a lemon.
Okay, so you're a real advocate, we know, of using sort of natural ingredients and not going out and buying all the hundreds of sprays and chemicals and stuff that are on the shelves right now.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I get a lot of people ask, like, oh, you should be an ambassador for this cleaning product and that. And I'm always just like, look at the back of it. Like, if you want, if you're into cleaning and you clean a lot, you don't want that stuff near your eyes, your skin. You don't want it around your home. There's no point. Like, there's usually a natural product that can do that. It's way more stunning, in my opinion, to just be able to do it naturally with non-toxic products. Like, there's so much vinegar, lemons and limes can do, hot water, bicarbonate of soda, like, all that kind of stuff can clean immaculately.
Well, one of the things that blew my mind today was your recommendation of using bicarbonate of soda all over the mattress. We've moved to the bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's a really stunning deodorizer, right? Like, it is something that loves to drink up odors. Like, if you think of the way, like, a towel would soak up liquid, bicarb will soak up odors. So if you're starting a spring cleaning day, one of the first things I would do is strip your bed. You want to bang your mattress. You'll be surprised at how many skin particles will come out to greet you. I know. If people knew the things we would change, you wouldn't be putting Febreze all over to then make it damp and stay inside the fibre. But anyway, give it a pat, give it a vacuum. Same with your sofa. And then at the start of the day, if you're cleaning for the day, sprinkle bicarb all over your sofa or your dog basket or maybe a chair that you find gets a bit smelly, and your mattress and leave it on for the day. That will just absorb the scent, and then you can vacuum it off afterwards. You'll have probably spent the day, you see, vacuuming your house. And if you vacuum something with bicarb at the very end, you will then leave that bicarb in your vacuum overnight, and it will cleanse the vacuum as well of odours. So it's like a win-win.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one, because I have two dogs, and the smell from the Hoover with the dog.
Hoover up some bicarb. Honestly, do that weekly. Just when you're finished, like, throw a bit onto the floor, vacuum it up, and then just put your vacuum away as normal, especially if it's a cordless that has a filter in it, like one of the kind of HEPA filters that you see. A bit of bicarb running through that is always stunning.
Okay, very quickly, mouldy spots that appear on the window seals. How do we deal with them?
So you've got to make sure, first of all, that you don't have cracks in the seal. But if you want to get rid of them, like, quickly, vinegar and water is amazing. So a lot of other products that people put on, like bleaches, that just takes the colour out of the mould. The mould still exists and the spore is still there. Instead, you want to use vinegar and water, 50-50 mix. Get a old rag, not a cloth that you'll use again, because you don't want to spread spores throughout your home. Cover your mouth, cover your nose, and just wipe it down with that. If it doesn't budge completely, you want to soak the cloth in the vinegar and water mixer, a bit more vinegar, and lay it on the seal, maybe for about a half an hour to an hour, and then rub it off.
Laura, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. You make me slightly wince all the time with some of the gross stuff, but honestly, I always get a take home. Laura DeBarra, thank you so much that advice. Lovely to chat to you this afternoon. Stephanie Rainey is back in studio. Also, I saw you have a little quiver there, a little quiver with some of the talk of mould and moths, particularly.
It's definitely giving me a bit of fear about how clean my house actually is. The mattress in particular, I'm like, oh, I think the word skin particles is never good anyway,
no,
is it? Like,
no, it's never a nice one.
Sounds fine.
Come here, we had a little chat earlier on and you mentioned your son Jackson. Yeah. So what age is he? What age is he now?
He's 17 months, yeah.
Okay.
And he's so 17 months. It's not even funny.
I have a 17 month old as well. I get exactly where you're at. It's a busy time.
It's busy. He has all of the intentions of doing things that he wants to do, but none of the sort of awareness of his surroundings. So it's kind of carried
eyes at the back of your head sort of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And how are you managing to juggle it all? Because you're on radio, you've got a new album coming out, being a mom, and you don't have the kind of the set hours. Has the adjustment been a big one for you?
If I'm being honest, it has been a little bit bigger than I thought. You know, I think that, like, when I was at the beginning, I was like, I think I can actually manage all this. But then you realize, like, that you just have to be able to time things properly. And in a weird way, I think when you become, well, when I became a mom, I was like, can I even be that person anymore? You know, like the kind of like the singer songwriter on stage. And I think it's taken me a while to come back to myself, but back in the studio now, and I'm really enjoying the process of it. And I think, like we talked about it a while ago, he just makes everything better and more worthwhile. So it's just put a good shape on life, because I think when you're in a creative industry, I think I wasted a lot of my time. I don't know what I used to do with my time, but now it's like very focused. Whenever I do something, it's like we have to get in, get it done. Don't sweat about it too much and leave it leave it in the studio.
All right. So in terms of creatively, you think it has made you a little bit smarter with your time?
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. More focused, I think, you know, less time to sort of, I think, faff about things and kind of more grounded decisions about time and all that kind of stuff. So it's an amazing, and sure, like, you know, I mean, they make you think about yourself so much less. You just can't, you're just like, it's all about him.
It is. I mean, your eyes light up when you talk about it. What would you say becoming a mother has taught you about yourself?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that I suppose I never could like picture what I would be like, but it is the age old thing of, you meet them and then all of a sudden it's like you can't ever imagine what life was like behind, like without them. Mm-hmm. And also I think that, you know, it puts a completely different spin on my life, because I think, you know, when you do the kind of job that I do, I think there's so many highs and lows, you know. Mm. One week you're doing something amazing and then there's so many disappointments that come along with the job. And I think you can kind of get wrapped up in how you feel about yourself and who you are. Whereas when you have, like with Jackson, I look at him and I just kind of go, like, he is my greatest accomplishment, you know what I mean? And he's the kind of center of it all. So it's just, I think it's just put a lot of things into perspective. So yeah, it's wonderful, like.
And I can't ignore Gary, who's behind you there on guitar as well, who's Jackson's dad. So together, you guys working, I mean, talk to me about the new album. Did you get to go away for a night or two or three and kind of have that little bit of creative space, or did you do it while changing nappies and burping and, you know, night feeds?
There's definitely a lot of pictures of Jackson in the studio knocking around where he's just in his bouncer, but like now that he's like less likely to want to sit down anywhere for any length of time, we've done a few writing trips where we've gone away and recording as well, just gone away someplace, completely focused work for like 2 or 3 days, and that seems to have worked. But we're still in the middle of it, we're not quite finished yet.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's great.
Okay, well, can't wait to hear it. You're going to do a song for us today. It's a cover, Catch the Wind by Donovan.
Yeah.
Why this song?
So I actually have had the pleasure of being kind of working with Donovan in the past. I've covered two of his songs that are kind of waiting to be released. And I just felt like this would be the right time, the right show to do it on. And I think he's listening. So the pressure is definitely on. I saw him on Tommy Tiernan a couple of weeks ago, and I just think, yeah, it's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. So hopefully we do it justice.
Of course you will. Take it away. Stephanie Rainey. Oh my goodness. That was absolutely stunning.
Thank you.
That was Catch the Wind. Thank you so much for coming in to join us today, guys. Sarah is up next on Drive Time, and we are back tomorrow at 3. Have a fabulous afternoon.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.